My name is David, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm also a double winner. I got sober in AA in 1979 and have been clean and sober for 43 years. I got abstinent in OA in 1983 and had a 71-pound weight loss that I maintained through the early 1990s. Then I relapsed, and it wasn't until 2019 that I found long-term abstinence again. I've been given a daily reprieve from my disease from compulsive overeating and my compulsive overeating behaviors, remaining abstinent for 3 years. I have maintained a 100-pound weight loss for the last year. And for all of that, I'm truly grateful to a power greater than myself, the 12-step program of Overeaters Anonymous and this fellowship. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you like to do things the hard way? Well, when I was in my 20s, I went to a retreat in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. As part of the retreat, we were scheduled with various practitioners. My first appointment was with a foot reflexologist. I removed my shoes and socks. She took my feet in her hands and gently rubbed the soles of my feet for about 10 seconds. Then she looked directly into my eyes and asked, "Why do you choose to do everything the hard way?" My response was, "What do you mean?" Today, when I think back over my life, I can see how many times I chose to do things the hard way. During my birth, the doctor realized when I was halfway down the chute that he should have done a cesarean section, but it was too late for that. He had my mother placed on a gurney with a large orderly who straddled her legs with his knees. They rolled the gurney back and forth from a cold room to a warm room, and as they made the transition, the orderly pushed down on my mother's belly. Eventually, they got me down low enough that forceps could be used to pull me out. That is how I came into the world. And the pattern of doing things the hard way continued. One day when I was only 3 months old, I cried all day long. Finally, in the middle of the afternoon, my desperate mother called the doctor to tell him I'd been crying inconsolably all day. He hung up on her without saying a word. But in about 10 minutes, the doorbell rang. The doctor shoved past my mother, picked me up, threw me on my parents' bed, removed my diaper, and began to press on my midsection. Shortly, he stood up and told my panic-stricken mother that he had heard me crying in the background on the phone and thought that if I'd been crying that hard all day long, I might have given myself a hernia. He instructed her to start feeding me cereal because I was hungry. And so my obsession with food began. There's a lot of photographic evidence to support that I had a food obsession. On my first year birthday, I was sitting in my high chair with a huge chunk of birthday cake that I was shoving into my mouth with two fists. When I was about 4 years old, there was a photo of me sitting on the kitchen floor with a big mixing bowl between my legs, running my finger around the inside of the bowl to get the remaining cake batter into my mouth. Soon I was mommy's little helper in the kitchen, and by the age of 8, I was cooking simple meals for the family. By the age of 10, I came home from school every day, had a snack, read the recipes my mother had left for me, and prepared the family meal before my parents got home from work. During this same time period, my doctor suggested that I take dance classes because my feet were so flat. So at age 5, I began dance class. A couple of years later, when the photographer came to take our photos for the dancing school, he suggested, and the teacher concurred, that I needed some control top briefs, AKA a male girdle. So my mother had to take me to the department store to get some new briefs before I could return to the studio and have my photograph taken. I was always more interested in cooking and eating than in sports and exercise, However, every boy of a certain age was expected to try out for Little League. When none of the coaches wanted me on their team, I wasn't bothered nearly as badly as my father. However, that is about the time that I started to sneak food. You know how it works. I'd sneak into the kitchen at night after everyone was in bed or during the day when they were all outside doing things in the yard. I'd get a knife, slice a sliver off of a piece of cake, sneak a cookie or two out of the cookie jar, eat a few leftover bites of casserole, or take a slice off a piece of meat or cheese and gulp it down quickly, making sure to leave no trace of evidence in the food containers, on the refrigerator shelves, or on the kitchen floor. I'd wash the knife or spoon and put them away. Once I'd gotten away with that, I actually shoplifted a candy bar from the grocery store. I thought I'd gotten away with it until my mother found me eating it and asked where it had come from. I burst into tears and admitted that I'd stolen it. My father took me to the grocery store manager's office where I had to tell the man what I'd done. The manager picked up the phone and said he was going to call the police department and have me arrested. I burst into tears and begged for forgiveness. My father pretended to mediate on my behalf as part of a ruse he had cooked up with the store manager before I got there. I had to clean up the grocery store storeroom for after school for 2 weeks as repayment for the 5-cent candy bar I'd stolen. I was relieved that I wasn't going to jail, but I was far from being cured of my obsession for food. My family had the unspoken rule that we must look good even when we felt bad. I told you that I cooked family meals from the age of 8. I also wrote my mother's resume for her when I was in the 9th grade. I became an Eagle Scout in our church Boy Scout troop. I was in honors English, math, and science programs throughout high school. I won awards for essay and citizenship contests. I sang in the church choir all through my school years, and I played the trombone in the marching band. And had there been a cooking show like MasterChef Junior back then, I probably would have competed in that as well. I wanted to look good and have everyone like me. By the time I graduated from high school, I was on blood pressure medication and had been diagnosed with arthritis. In college, on doctor's orders, I took adaptive PE. And I got my meals directly from the dietitian rather than from the regular cafeteria line. Being on scholarship with limited funds, I couldn't buy a lot of snacks, but I was always eager to attend parties and potlucks on the weekends. Needless to say, my weight and my blood pressure went down very insignificantly. After graduation, I went to work for a hospital holding company, working as a hospital financial manager. I quickly was moved up the corporate office as a budget analyst and compared budgets of two similar sized hospitals, one making money and one losing money. I then suggested change for the losing hospital to help them turn a profit. Soon I became an internal auditor and went around the country auditing hospitals. Being single and up to speed on all the corporate policies and procedures, I was made the troubleshooting comptroller. I was sent to a hospital losing money, turned it around before being sent to another hospital. My average length of stay at a hospital was 6 to 9 months, and my reputation preceded me. This meant that everyone was afraid I would have them fired or gut their department's budget. With no friends or social life, I turned to food and other substances to manage the stress. After a few years, I passed out at work from high blood pressure. And that plus my EKG results sent me to a heart specialist. I was still in my 20s at this point. I quit my job to get away from the stress and decided to become a school teacher, mistakenly thinking that this would relieve my stress. I got a job managing a college cafeteria in order to get tuition remission on education classes. And after 3 years in the cafeteria, I was moved to the bookstore and post office where I managed both adult employees and student workers. During these 6 years at the college, my compulsive behaviors took over. I worked hard all day, attended classes at night, and partied on weekends. I also embezzled some money from the college to support my compulsive behaviors and cooked the books to cover my tracks. After 6 years at the college, I still had 6 credits toward my education degree. Only had 6 credits toward my education degree. So I decided to apply for a student loan at the bank and go to school full time. The overweight loan officer was impressed with my resume and my desire to become a school teacher, but he told me to come back in 3 days after he'd done a credit check on me. Well, my blood pressure went through the roof because I knew I didn't have any credit history to check. I had no credit cards. I didn't own a home. My car had been paid off for years. However, I thanked him and went home to eat. 3 days later, I went back to the bank to see him. I explained to the secretary that the loan officer had told me to come back in 3 days, purposely omitting that he was going to do a credit check. She walked over to his desk and found my loan application. Then she told me that he had died the same afternoon after I'd seen him from a massive heart attack. So she walked over to another loan officer and asked him to sign the loan. He did, and I walked out of the bank with a loan that was renewable for 2 years. I took classes at the state university during the day and worked in the library between classes. I studied at night and worked at a bookstore in town on the weekends. However, I became more and more reclusive. So I decided to see a therapist and was soon in group therapy. On the first night of therapy, we were each given a paper bag and boxes of crayons and markers and told to make sack puppets of ourselves. When we were done, the therapist explained that it was interesting to see how we had represented ourselves, but the real purpose of the exercise was to see who had sniffed the crayons or the markers. It turned out that we all had done it. And according to our therapist, it indicated that we just might have a proclivity toward addiction. Some people in the group laughed. Others of us looked shocked and embarrassed. The guy sitting next to me told me he was an alcoholic and asked me to go to a meeting with him. Thinking he wanted my support as he went to his first AA meeting, I agreed to go. The rest is history. I left the meeting with a temporary sponsor, and a few years later, someone in my home group of AA suggested that I might like to go with her to an OA meeting. Soon, I had 2 sponsors and was working on the 2 4-step inventories while going to school and working and doing therapy. My compulsions were lifted. I had a food plan and life was getting better. But the stress of completing steps 5 and moving on to 6, 7, 8, and 9 was terrifying. I did what was suggested though and managed to graduate with honors. I had started program at 283 pounds and gave up 71 of them. I got a job at a great school teaching first grade, and I loved it. I went back to university and completed my master's degree, wrote a thesis, and was named outstanding graduate student in the College of Education, all while teaching first grade. Always doing it the hard way. Soon, I was working on my 9th step amends. I went back to the college where I had worked and found the former assistant manager, who had now taken the place of my former boss. I told him that I'd stolen money from the college while working there. He laughed and refused to believe it because our former boss had thought so highly of me. I even explained to him how I'd done it. He looked at me and said, if you had done what you said you did, we would have caught it. Now get out of here and go teach school. My sponsor and I discussed what had happened, and he suggested that the manager couldn't accept my amends because it would mean that he hadn't done his job well enough to catch me, and that would put him in a bad light. So after some further discussion and discernment, we decided that the best thing for me to do would be to make a series of donations to the college to cover the amount I had taken. And let me tell you, I was relieved when I made that final donation. All of the ninth step promises began to come true after my amends were made, and I decided that it was time to move on. Without going into all the details, within 18 months of that decision, I heard about a one-year position in Friday Harbor, Washington, teaching second grade for 1 year while someone else was on leave of absence. It turned out that I was one of 35 people who applied, and one of three who got an interview. I interviewed on a Wednesday and they offered me the job on Thursday. I moved from Louisiana to San Juan Island, owing no one anything and with all my possessions in my Toyota Tercel hatchback. I arrived on the island at noon and had rented a small cabin on the water by 4 p.m. Then the one-year job turned into a full-time job the next year. Talk about a higher power. I was happy teaching and living in my little paradise. I had cleared up the wreckage of the past. I was not drinking or overeating, and I was maintaining my weight loss. Then my old friend stress came back because I still liked to do everything the hard way. There were lots of AA meetings on the island, but there was only one OA meeting, and with three members, none of whom had a sponsor or sponsored anyone else. My AA sponsor understood addiction, but had no experience, strength, and hope to share when it came to food. Slowly, I began to push the envelope on my food plan. Then I began to stress eat. Before too long, I was back into my old ways of eating and dealing with stress. I kept going to meetings, but I wasn't doing the step work I needed to do or using the tools of the OA program. Over this extended relapse period, which lasted almost 25 years, I began to have multiple health issues. I quit teaching and had several jobs, finally ending up being a church administrator for 15 years. Just before the pandemic hit, I worked with a health professional and a long-distance sponsor to develop a plan of eating, which was tailored to me and my health issues. By this time, I had not only gained all my former weight back, but I had gotten up to 314 pounds. By following my new food plan and working with my sponsor and my doctors, weight began to disappear. I had more energy and my brain fog began to lift. So when the pandemic came along, I had a program that worked for me. I was losing weight while others were gaining. By this time, two members of my OA group had died from age and health issues, and the others had left the island. So for a year, I went to our meeting location each week and read literature, prayed, and paid the rent. Then a woman who had been in relapse moved to the island, and we supported each other in getting back on track. Now we have a really good meeting. We purchased some new literature. We are advertising our meeting and hope to grow our ranks. We are each working with sponsors long distance. What changed? It was my attitude. I had gotten the idea into my head that I could do things my way and let my tools get rusty. I started reading literature and doing some writing. At the suggestion of my new sponsor, I used the tool of writing more. Each night, as I wrote out my 10th step, I also wrote out 3 to 10 things in my gratitude journal that I was grateful for. Then I went to bed feeling grateful. The next morning when I woke up, I said my third step prayer and I read the previous night's entries in my gratitude journal. That way, I started each day with an attitude of gratitude, which made it easier to work the steps in all my affairs and to stay on my food plan and follow my action plan. In October, I went for my annual wellness checkup, and my doctor said that my health continues to improve. He's taken me off two medications in the last 2 years, and my lab tests were normal. My blood pressure was excellent, my inflammation markers were down, and I have maintained a 100-pound weight loss for a year. The doctor said, keep up the good work, and I'll see you in another year. The program of Overeaters Anonymous is a simple program, but not an easy one. It doesn't have to be a hard way of doing things, though. If I maintain my attitude of gratitude, humble myself to work with others, stay honest, use the steps and tools, the OA way is the softer, easier way I was looking for all along. I no longer have to be the overachieving guy who looks good and feels bad. I recently read a quote that said, gratitude can transform common days into Thanksgivings, turn routine jobs into joy, and change ordinary opportunities into blessings. And I would add to that, trust in a higher power will always save the day. Thank you for giving me my life back. And thank you for letting me share my story tonight.